Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to an extra special Monday edition of Extra Time 1v1 from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe, no partners in soccer on this Monday. International break has us scattered away doing our own thing, but luckily, Charlie Davies and I sat down with Dwayne DeRosario in Minnesota, in St. Paul, at Allianz Stadium, in the middle of a rehearsal, which you will figure out in the beginning of this wonderful interview with D-Row. Producer Anders managed to edit it out on the back end, so hopefully the sound will be to your liking. But it is a wonderful interview with D-Row. We covered so much, all the way from his early days in MLS, all of the trials and tribulations he had as a potential transfer target for Europe, as well as a Canadian national team player in a completely different era. You won't believe some of these stories. After the interview, D-Row said to both Charlie and I can't believe you got me to talk about some of that stuff. Sometimes I think that's somebody yanking my chain, being like, oh, yeah, I said a whole lot. Other times, like in this case, I feel like D-Row really opened up with us. It was a wonderful interview. I hope you enjoy it. Of course, we have a lot to say about the international break, and we will say it on Wednesday with a special edition of Club and Country Qatar 2022. Yes, the U.S. performance against Japan was dispiriting at best and a depressing sign of what's to come in Qatar at worst, but we'll try to sift through that. After Saudi Arabia, there's a chance at redemption. There's a live watch-along for that one. Susanna Collins, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies will be with you during that one live on YouTube Live as well as Twitch. And then on Wednesday, we'll release right here on this channel as well as YouTube Club and Country, analyzing what happened in this international break and what it means looking ahead into November when the real games start, when the legacy of both the U.S. and Canada will be set. Of course, Canada with a win against Qatar, and they will get another shot at a big-time opponent, a World Cup opponent in Uruguay on Tuesday as well. So look forward to that show on Wednesday. We will be back on Thursday with an MLS-only edition of the pod, looking ahead to the rest of the year as the MLS Cup playoffs loom. With no further ado, Dwayne DeRosario. Enjoy. All right, it's a pleasure to sit down with Dwayne DeRosario, an MLS legend, a Canada legend, a recipient of the Order of Ontario. Charlie and I were talking, Dwayne, do we need to kneel? Is this like being knighted?
Just one knee.
Just one knee.
Just one knee. Is that like the key to the city? Is that basically what it is?
Yes, it's equivalent, yes. And it's a huge honor for myself, for my family, and getting the Order of Ontario was amazing. And then I just got into the Canada Sports Hall of Fame not too long ago. So it's been an amazing year, for sure.
So are you a prince? Like,
does that get passed down to your children, like, are your sons?
No, it's not that cool, but it's an amazing honor, for sure.
But whenever Drake has a party, he has to contact you first.
He'd be like, yeah, D-Row, somebody's wants, coming man. Through. He can do whatever he wants.
Let's talk about Canada, about the future, and also about the present. Before we into this team in 2022 and the World Cup they believed in, but so many others maybe didn't, and maybe I got to raise my hand on that. You got the next generation coming through of the DeRosario clan playing pro. Yes. York, right? Your son is...
Yes, my son's at York. My other son's at TFC2 currently, and a proud dad, to see my kids pursue their dream, pursue their passion, and make something out of their love for the sport that is... done so much for myself and my family throughout my career, and that journey is just an amazing one. And I'm glad to see my kids and sit back as a father, as a fan of theirs now, and watch them, take their life with both hands and go after their dreams.
Talk about your coaching style, your philosophy, things you've learned, things you've liked. Being a dad versus being a coach, like, how do you blend that in? How do you make it work?
You know, it's funny. It's with my children, I'm just a father. Like, I'm not a ex-pro footballer, nothing. No matter what I tell them, sometimes it seems like it doesn't stick. But there's little pieces that you see that they resonates with them and they understand. And for me, it's more off the field stuff than on the field that I really try to teach them about maintaining that professionalism. As you know, it's almost easier to get a pro contract. It's harder to keep it and maintain it, right? There's so many things going off the field. And I feel for this generation today with the social media aspect, very distracting. And it could become almost, in the forefront, and football could be almost secondary. So I'm just trying to let them understand that balance and making sure they maintain humble and keep working hard.
spotlight's different. So many things are different from when you came up to now. Your boys and obviously this generation of Canadian national teamers that are going to play. What are the biggest differences you see in sort of the opportunities, the environment in Canadian soccer, and for these young kids that now can dream and look and say, look, we're back at the World Cup. We're hosting in 2026. Yeah. Canada soccer is top of the octagonal, and we're rising. We're rising quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, all respect due to MLS. Is a huge part of that success, being the fact that these kids now have an opportunity to play in a structured professional environment. Now, when they wear that badge, it means something. There's a pathway there to the first team, and every kid in Ontario across Canada want to be a part of, you know, Montreal Impact. They want to be a part of Toronto FC. They want to be a part of the Vancouver Whitecaps. They want to play in MLS. They want to be a part of that. We didn't have that growing up, right? You know, we were kind of the flag bearers of creating that legacy to where we have it now, you know, and we're reaping the rewards of that. You know, yes, MLS is a predominantly American market, but in Canada, it's done so much and it's helped elevate our soccer to levels where as a national team, we have to step up now. We have to be accountable in terms of how we're treating the players, in terms of the positions we're putting them in, and in terms of preparing. Right. If you look at our national team coaching staff, it's almost more than our player staff. And that's always been the case for U.S. soccer. Every time we played against the U.S. national team, we're like, man, these guys get treated properly. Right. And we look at that and we kind of envy that, you know, and it's finally now come to a point where Canada national team has stepped up, put their money where their mouth is, and is providing an environment, a pro environment for these guys that no different than what they're getting at their club, they're now receiving. Whereas when I left, I kind of felt like even though I'm playing with the national team, and I don't want to say this disrespectfully, sometimes I feel like I made a step back in terms of how I felt treated as a professional, you know, in terms of the environment when I go in and we have one physio or, you know, one equipment guy, and, you know, you're just trying to get things and trying to ask for things. It's like pulling teeth, you know, even our flights, you know, these guys travel, you know, first class, and everything they do is first class, and that's the way it should be. And when you do that and treat the players properly and respectfully on that level, the benefits of that, you reap the rewards and qualify for a World Cup.
Was it just the fact that Alphonso Davies was able to go to Bayern Munich and play in Champions League? Or do you think it was the Canadian Federation saying, hey, we got to support these guys because, look, we have players playing in top competitions among the best players in the world, mm-hmm. that if we can kind of get behind them, that we can lift this whole program up? Or was it the players first performing and then they were like, ah?
You know, we always had players performing. You know, I'm not going to ever discredit the past players. I mean, we have players like myself doing well in MLS, Stalteri doing well in the Bundesliga. We have players playing in the Premier League. So it's always, you know, we've always had players producing. But when we had it felt like the national team wasn't producing for us.
Right.
Like it's one thing when you have to go playing professional and you're flying, you know, charter or first class. Back and then it wasn't charter. But, you know, at least the flight situation, some of it was good. But, you know, when you're flying with your national team and you're traveling like three flights to get to one destination, it doesn't work, right? And then you have a 2-day window to get ready for a qualifying match. Now, you know, I have to give credit to Herdsman as well, because he's stepping up. He's battling for the players and he wants everything done properly. Now we're traveling with our own chefs. We've never done that before. I've never experienced that. You know, so all these little things that add up to the big picture. And, you know, again, like I said, MLS is a huge part of that. These kids are playing in a professional environment. They're seeing their heroes. They're seeing their stars, how they conduct themselves, you know, coming in and out of training. And these things definitely help raise the profile of the sport. And, you know, it makes everything a lot more tangible for these young kids.
I don't want to belabor the old days. We want to talk about the here and now. But I did read that when you won Canadian Player of the Year, they gave you a Sony gift card. And I want to know what you bought with the Sony gift card.
Oh, man.
I want to know what the purchase was. Like,
you know what? It's actually the first player of the year, Frank Yallop, one of the guys on our team. You know, he had this sports memorabilia thing that he was doing. He's selling sports memorabilia. And Frank Yallop bought signed Pelé jersey and gave me that because they didn't have something in place. And they're like, we can't honor a player of our national team and not give him anything. And then the year after that, they gave me a Sony gift card. It was like $750. So I got like a couple wires for the TV I couldn't even afford.
Oh my God. Wait, so they gave you a national team jersey of someone else. It is Pele, but they gave you a Brazil national team jersey.
But that was because of Frank Yalp, though.
Yeah.
You know, he did that,
that
on
was
his
a pretty
own.
That was a pretty choice gift. You know, do you have that hanging in your house?
For sure. Oh, yeah. For sure. That's huge for me. I mean, that's, you know, Pele's
there. You never let that go.
That's amazing. But, you know, it's just those little things that you don't feel like. There's no real hard incentive. We get it. We're proud. I'm passionate, you know, when I represent my country and stuff like that. But it's also nice to know that, you know, you're being honored and respected for that hard work and that commitment and the sacrifices you make for leaving your club and leaving your family and going to play some of these ridiculous international friendlies all over the world. And, you know, the Sony gift card was... Man, I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. $750. I went in there. I was excited. Sony gift card. I gave it to actually my friend worked. I remember I was at Scarborough Town Center. I went in there. I'm like, dude, man, I just got this for being.
How much did you think was on it? Did you know?
I thought maybe like $5,000.
Okay.
Or at least $2,000. I was thinking. Hopefully, you know,
you're gonna hook up the whole house.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then he's like, dude, this is only $750. He was even laughing. He's like, $750.
Right.
I'm like,
that's
okay, what can I buy in
TV,
here?
Right? You had that big tube TV.
You could get a boom box.
I get a boom box. I get headphones.
CD, tape, AM, FM.
You know, exactly.
You touched on this current national team. You were the trendsetter, the role model. How influential are you with this current group? How many conversations are you having? I know you're around Osorio a bunch TFC.
Yeah, you know, I don't have too much hands-on with this program. Last game, the qualifying game, actually Herdman actually asked me to come into the locker room and speak to the guys before the match. So that was a huge honor and just explain to them what this means to us. Not only us as players, but us as a country, but more so as a developing football nation. You know, hockey's going to always be our number one sports, and that's fine. We're never in competition with hockey, but there could be a number two sport too. Basketball's on the rise, and soccer is as well. We've always been one of the most populated countries in the world in terms of grassroots soccer attendance, but it doesn't resonate. There's a gap, right? And we're trying to fix that gap, and qualifying for the World Cup definitely helps to fix that gap. And I'm just trying to show them how big this is, bigger than us as players. This is a legacy they have now created for generations to come. Now, hopefully, let's not stop here. Let's continuously qualify. Let's our U20, you know, qualify, which we had a disappointing outing, you know, at the last qualifiers, you know. So we have to fill the bottom now of this cup, because right now on the top it's full, but the bottom is kind of missing. So we need to match what's going on at the men's level with the youth level, and I'm pretty sure that's starting to slowly piece itself together. We have players now that are saying, hey, you know, I'm Canadian.
Yeah,
you know, and they have like four generations. It wasn't like that. We were like thinking, okay, well,
How do I become American?
Or how do I become, like, do I play for Guyana? Or do I play for, you know, like De Guzman, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I played for Holland. And I get it. I mean, it's tough when you're in an environment where you're playing in Europe and you're getting treated like a pro. And it's tough to say, okay, you know, I'm going to go play for Canada at that time, you know?
Let me take three connecting flights.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. When you have an opportunity to play for Holland. But, you know, being the proud Canadian that I was, I just felt like I can help change that. And my only mission as a national team player was to help Canada qualify for the World Cup. So to see that in my lifetime is a dream come true.
Who do you connect with most on this team, and how did you experience qualifying? I mean, it had to just kind of be like this wave of emotion for all of you that put so much into this program.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, quite a few players I connect with. Obviously, you mentioned Jonathan Osorio, you know, and the kids that looked up to me growing up, playing with him with Toronto FC and creating a great relationship and seeing him develop as the player that he is today. You know, Daniil Henry, Atiba Hutchinson, you know, played many competitions with Atiba, Milan. So there's a lot of players that I've played with. In fact, we have pickup runs. I did pickup runs during COVID for a lot of these players that didn't have an opportunity to play or didn't have a facility. And, you know, a lot of these guys would
was showing up?
Kamal Miller. Who else was there? Just a lot of players. Young goalie that's here today. I'm trying to remember all the names.
Yeah,
you know?
Dan
was there. You know, so to see these guys at the All-Star, represent All-Star, it's amazing because, you know, here we are playing pickup games because these guys didn't have fields to train on and play. And they're leaving for Canada for a World Cup qualifier. You would think, you know, we would have some type of structure environment for these guys while they're at home during a tough period of COVID. So I was very fortunate to create that environment for them so they could stay fit and train. And
Did you hit him with the celly though?
Oh yeah. Well, we always, I'll tell you what we did. We played the veterans against the pros, the current pros, against the up and coming. Like at the time my kids Heated. Would be and the young kids. Oh yes. But don't ask me who always won, but you know, that's
you know, so we always looking at this Canadian team now and the challenges in front of them in the World Cup. This group, that's a group of death.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are your expectations for them?
Well, I mean, like, what's realistic? The World Cup, every group is a group of death, man.
There's no, so but this is different.
Yeah, I know. This is different.
Come on.
This is
but
different.
The nice thing, Belgium, yeah. Croatia, the nice thing that Canada Morocco? Being there helps make it the group of death. Like, right?
Yeah.
That's a vote of confidence.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I understand what you're saying. These are world-class
yes.
teams.
Yes.
Right? There's not, you know, the depth, the experience that they have, you know, and especially what they did in Russia. You know, I was there to witness, you know, Belgium. I mean, you know, What an outing they had in Russia and Croatia, you know. So, you know, we're playing against two very experienced teams that what concerns me is they're very prepared right now.
Right.
And we only had one friendly, right? And that's a little concerning. And we have one more before we get in that window, right? And I think it's two actually. I think we just confirmed the other day we have two. But still, you know, these guys are it's an interesting dynamic for the World Cup this year. Where that it's actually in the November. So if you look at it, you know, guys who are playing in MLS and they're at the peak now. They're flying, right? Or they should be extremely fit. Guys who are playing in Europe now, they're just starting. They're now starting to get their legs going. They're now starting to click come November, December times. So it's different. Where in the summer times, it was the flip side. It was players who are playing in North America, MLS, we're now kind of, you know, getting things going, getting our flow and our rhythm. Whereas in Europe, they're flying because it's towards the end of their season. So it's an interesting dynamic now, and I'm interested to see how that impacts the play on the field. Are the Europe guys going to be more fresh, or you know, and the South American guys, are they going to be more fresh, or are we going to see a kind of one of those where, you know, a lot of the MLS players who are playing 90 minutes for the last year, are they going to be flying, or are they going to be fatigued and tired? So, you know, it's an interesting dynamics of how the schedules change for the World Cup. So I'm interested to see how that happens. But no doubt, you know, Canada has a very, very tough group.
I don't think I heard the realistic expectations.
Yeah,
there.
What's the realistic expectation?
Oh, yeah, that was that question. I was trying to avoid that question. I was trying to avoid that question. Yeah, I was trying to avoid that question. Listen, I'm going to be very honest. It's a tough group. Yeah. You know, if we scrape and get out of that group,
That's a success.
That's a huge success. I'm just happy the fact that we're there and we're having the conversation of Canada being in the World Cup first and foremost. So my expectations, I don't really have much. I can't say that I do. Being respectful of a team like Croatia, being respectful of a team like
even
Belgium.
Morocco.
I was just gonna say. And let's not even forget Morocco. They won African Nations Cup. That's not easy. that's a very strong team. So, you know, they're playing in an environment where probably out of all of those teams, they're more accustomed to, you know, that heat, that you know, Middle East, African, you know, kind of culture, that environment. They're definitely used to playing in that. So I think out of all of those teams, they probably have the upper hand out of everybody, you know, because these guys have to train in that environment. They have to, you know, live in that environment for however long those teams get down there. So I think Morocco, out of all those teams, have the upper hand. I'm interested to see how, you know, we adapt to playing against teams in a World Cup environment, you know,
right.
Something that we're very immature, something that we're very inexperienced in, and how we handle our emotions, how we play. Now, that could benefit us, though.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're playing against Belgium, Morocco, and Croatia, they're going in thinking, Canada, come on, we got this.
Yeah.
And if we could sneak out an early goal, you know, and be up and hold it, It could be pretty interesting.
Do you expect like one player to have a breakout performance this World Cup? If you had to pick one guy,
yeah,
outside of Alphonso Davies.
Man, it's tough, man. I think.
I feel like Tejan Buchanan could be that guy.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely has the speed. He has that confidence right now, and he has the ability to isolate players 1v1 and take them on and create some great chances. I would love to see Jonathan Davies be that player as well. We need him to be that player going forward. and Kyle Larin to step up in, because, you know, at the end of the day, you need to score goals.
Yeah.
Right? And if you want to get out the group, you have to score goals. You have to beat teams, unless you're going to do what, who is it, Italy, you know, 1-0 in, or is it Greece?
It's Greece and then New Zealand. Yeah. New Zealand's out the 1-0 in 0-0
get through, sneak through. So, hey, anyway, at the end of the day, it's World Cup. So any way you have to get there, you find a way, make it happen.
You were in Russia. Are you going to be in Qatar?
Yes, your plans? That's the plan, to be in Qatar for sure. I do not want to miss my dream. You know, I want to see it. I want to see the looks on these guys' face. I want to cry with them. I want to laugh with them. I want to, you know, share all those emotions with the team. And I hope not only myself, I hope other players from my national team that has put in time and effort are a part of that experience, because that's all we would play for. You know, that's why we stepped on the field and represent our countries, to be at the, as they say, the big dance. And there's nothing bigger as a footballer, global or international, to play in a World Cup.
Next 4 years for Canada and for the U.S. as well, for North America, really. Mexico's a part of this. We're all in here now. 2022, we're talking about what's going to happen. But on the horizon, sort of in the back of our minds, we all know in our country, in stadiums like this around North America, we're going to bring the world to us.
Yes.
What could the next 4 years mean for Canadian soccer? When we hit 2027, what do you see in your mind's eye? What do you hope this has become for Canada?
Yes, soccer is here. Football is here. You know, you can't hide it no more. You can't, the media can't hide it no more. All the big broadcasting and sports networks, they can't hide it no more. They can't shun it and put it in the background. It's got to be in the forefront of our papers now. It's got to be in the forefront of the conversation in sports. It has to be now. Right. And that's the tip of the iceberg right there. And I think that's what's going to I think after that, you're going to see a huge draft. We're seeing it right now. Look at how much young players are coming to MLS. MLS is an attractive league, you know, and I'm not only saying MLS in terms of, I'm talking right across the board in Canada as well. So, you know, to have Canada host the World Cup, it's going to, again, elevate the sport. It's going to put it in a position where now we're having real conversations of, you know, what's Canada's sport. And I think in the future, we're looking at soccer.
I would love to know, so let's switch it up a little bit, in terms of your all-star performances, that experience. What did that do for you? You were in the East-West days. I miss those. And I think we have enough talent that we can bring it back.
He went East-West and then over to the modern day.
Over to the modern day, banging against Chelsea. Right. What was that experience for you?
Amazing. It's an opportunity for you, for all of these players to showcase themselves at international level. Again, for me, that was like my World Cup, because we didn't qualify for a World Cup. So that was my World Cup, to play against the world greats on one team. You know, beating Chelsea, I think that was a turning point for All-Star and MLS, because that was the blockbuster Chelsea team. That was the first team that they were the Galacticos of the modern era, right? When they signed Shevchenko and Drogba and Essien and all these big players, right? And look what they went on to win that year. Maybe that loss was a wake-up call for them. You know, but it's a platform where, you know what? You go out there and you go at them. You take them on, because, you know, I always want to showcase. I always stepped on the field with one thing in mind. I'm representing myself first and foremost. I'm representing Canadian soccer to show the world that we have talent in Canada. We have players, and they're not just kick and run players. They're players that are willing to take players on and 1v1 and play with that flair and that attractive style of football, soccer. And to showcase MLS, that it's a good league, right? Even though, okay, on the major broadcast, we're not on the forefront, we're not talked about because maybe we don't have the same salary caps, but the players and what they contribute to this game is equally the same, right? And it's just, we're not postered all over the place like it is in Europe culturally. But as I said, now it's culture. Now you come here and you see fans with MLS jerseys. When we played there against Chelsea, you're seeing blue and like, are we playing in England, or are we playing
in
the UA London, right? Are we playing in the US? So, you know, I think that's changed now. I think you're going to see a lot of, Mexican fans, but you're definitely going to see more MLS fans. Or you're going to see Mexican fans with MLS and thing, because the respect is there now, right? And look how much representation we have on this all-star team, Mexican players. And we're talking about top-flight players. We're not talking about has-beens, right?
Yeah, we're talking about L3 players.
Yeah.
Guys that didn't play in the World Cup.
Right.
It occurs to me that in this era of MLS, and we saw it sort of be teased over and over in your career, you probably wouldn't have been an MLS player your entire career. You would have been in Europe. You went on trial to a number of clubs, and we've been to, you know, AC Milan, Barcelona, Portsmouth, mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. Do you think things would have been different for you in this era? How so? And then I got to get some stories from those trials, man. I got to hear about what that was like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, let's not talk. I also had an opportunity at Blackburn.
Yep.
But MLS wanted too much money, and Blackburn said, turn that opportunity down, right? And I was like, man, if you're gonna ask for that much money, hook a brother up,
right? Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? We all know what happened with the Celtics opportunity that, you know, they were playing Champions League. They actually played Barcelona that year, where I should have, you know, should have been there, right? And then I end up leaving that same year to go traded to New York because I didn't want to play under those conditions anymore. And then New York to DC, and how that year went. So, you know what? Too, what was the question? I can't remember.
I mean, how do you think it would have been different for you? I mean, you would have made that move. Do you ever?
Yeah, you know.
I don't know if regret's the right word, but do you ever think about what could have been in like a different moment?
Of course, you know, football then was all Europe, right? And MLS was on the come up. MLS was growing at the time, so who knows what could have happened? You know, but I'm very happy that I helped this league grow. I created a strong name for myself in North America. Maybe if I went to Europe, I'd have been here, there, all over the place. I probably wouldn't have a strong football presence in terms of my name and what I've been able to contribute. Or maybe I went over there and killed it and did what I did in the MLS. I don't know. I would go over there and do my thing.
Help people understand. So you were under contract and you were allowed to trial.
Yes.
So in those circumstances, typically there's a price already associated to if you do perform,
right,
that they'll let you go. Did those circumstances change once you played well and they're like, oh, they do want them, like, actually let's jack that price up?
Well, you know it is, if it's a lower league, they would be like, oh, okay. But once they see a team like Blackburn Premier League, the prices go through the roof, right? And it was disappointing because at that time it was 2006. Right, we're coming off a high, you know, and
this was the Dynamo days.
The Houston transition into the Dynamo days, yeah. Right? And you know, it was one of those where I gave everything to the league, you know, and I was looking like, okay, you know, help me out, you know. But on the back end, I can't tell you exactly all the ins and outs of what happened, but I know that deal didn't go through because they wanted a lot of money for me.
So you balled. You balled at the trial.
Oh yeah, for sure.
How long was it? Like,
oh, it was a 2 week trial. Okay. It was a 2 week trial it was supposed to be a week, but they wanted me to stay there. Mark Hughes was the coach.
Okay.
And when he didn't sign me, and he ended up picking up Craig Bellamy.
Okay.
At the time. And I played against the first team and I balled out, man. I think I scored a hat trick on them, you know, and you know, I went from, you know, it is when you first go there, they put you up in a hotel and stuff like that. And then when you start to play and perform, you start to see them doing a little bit more for you, you know, and start taking care of you a little bit more. And, you know, at Celtic, when I first went there, you know, me and Samaras clicked
right
automatically.
Off the bat.
And Limpier was there.
Okay.
Not Limpier. What's his name? Swedish player that played for Seattle. Lundberg was there, and we had an instant connection, right? And at the time they wanted me, and you know, I even went to the Old Firm game, sat with the fans, you know, at Ibrox Stadium, Celtic vs Rangers, and you know, again, it just didn't fell through because of poor management, for one, to be honest. And then Aaron Vinter at the time wanted me to come to preseason because I was an integral part of the team. I was a captain, and he wanted me to be a part of this new philosophy that he was bringing, which is the Dutch way.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, I've been playing at that time, at 17, 18 years in my career. It's not hard. I could pick it up. I have an opportunity to play with one of the biggest historic clubs on the planet, Celtic. And they wanted me on loan too,
okay,
just for half the season. But all this stuff was new for MLS, right? This is like all new discussions. Like, how do we navigate through that? How do we do that? How do we have a player go on loan? And now you're seeing it happen left, right, and center.
See Brendan Aaronson making big moves, up, doing it the right way.
Right, and it's healthy for the league because that's the sport on an international level.
Exposure.
And if you want to be a part of the international game and want to be taken serious, you got to be open to the marketplace like that. You know, take a player on loan. If I went there for Celtic, who knows, on the flip side, okay, well, we like your player, let's create a relationship where maybe, you know, we can take some of your players back and forth, whatever the case is, and create a unique situation with a historic club. So, but unfortunately, that went sour real quick. Real quick.
Let's do some less sour. What is the biggest goal that you think you've ever scored in your career?
Oh man, that's tough. Obviously, any MLS cup games would be up there for sure.
Do you have a favorite though?
It's hard to pick a favorite. The MLS Cup, you win a championship.
Yeah,
how do you pick?
You know, there's one that maybe you're like that.
Well, I would say if anything, it would be 2001 because that was my first, you know, coming back from Europe, playing in Germany for 2 years, and coming over here, and you know, really trying to create a name for myself, and you know, going through what I was going through personally at that time, and you know, that was when I really stamped my name in this league. So I would say that was probably the turning point for me and my career in MLS.
Take people who maybe weren't even born 20 years ago into that 2001 Quakes team.
Oh man,
that stacked up.
There's some real
players in that squad.
Well, what was funny was that year was either San Jose Earthquakes were gonna relocate or Miami Fusion was gonna fold or relocate, and we beat Miami, which is another stacked team with Pablo Mastroianni, Serna, Carlos Lemosa. Man, they were stacked team. Preki was on that team as well, and you know, we were the underdogs. You know, young Landon, young Di Rosario, but we had Jeff Agus, Troy Dyack, Manny Lagos, local guy. Shout out to Manny.
Saw him last night.
Yeah. Manny Lagos, Wade Barrett, Richard Mulrooney, and the Danish assassin.
It's on the tip of my
tongue. So many names,
too.
Man. He's gonna say, man, you didn't remember my name
I listened. What happened to you on that? Eklund.
Ronnie Eklund.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like it was right there. I'm seeing his face.
You know, and you know, quality all over the field, and you know, that first year, obviously, Quakes, you know, didn't make the playoffs. They were struggling. The whole market was struggling. Soccer in the Bay Area was struggling, and here we are, you know. Straight out the gate, flying, winning, beat LA in LA the first game. My first opportunity to showcase myself, scoring that game. So, you know, I felt good about myself, you know. Yes, got to get that role. Because, you know, as a goal scorer, it's, you know, getting your first goal is the hardest thing to do.
Yes.
So to come out the gates and, you know, score your first goal in your first game, first in your MLS career, for me was like, okay, nice. And we beat our rivalry in LA. Right. So that was okay. You know, this team, we got something special here. You know, Ronald Cerritos, you know, we had a very good team. We had weapons all over, but one thing, we were committed. You know, Frank and Dom really created a recipe for success. They really managed. They're one of the best man management coaches I've ever met.
Talk about Dom Kinnear, because we spoke to Brandon Vasquez yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you know, being in the league, there's not too many coaches that sit down with you and mm-hmm. go over video as an individual,
right?
And say, look at, let's watch this game together and mm-hmm. go over. He was talking about the runs, the hold up play, and how Dom is helping him fulfill his dreams of playing for the U.S. Men's National Team at a World Cup and also eventually making a move over to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, he cares, man. Like he really loves this game, right? He does above and beyond things that you know, that other coaches or managers, because let's be honest, at this level, it's all about management. It's not really coaching, like put down a couple cones, do that stuff. It's about managing. How can I get this team to play for me? How can I get this team to buy into my philosophy or my system of play? And they're able to do that, and they're able to take the your best qualities and really highlight them, but make you understand, okay, but these are the areas you need to work on,
right?
But really make you feel better than you almost are. You know, where you go on the field, somehow they make everyone feel like they have a chance. You know, even if you're the 18th guy, the 20th guy on the roster, you still feel like you have a chance because they're always talking to you. They're always pulling you aside, you know, keep working on this, or you need to do more of this. So that open dialogue that they have is one I think all players, you know, have a positive response to.
What was young Landon like?
Energy, carefree. He was like, you know, he came in. Obviously, that was a big move.
Yeah.
He was the golden child for U.S. soccer at the time. So, you know, a lot of weight on his shoulder for a young kid. But it's almost like he liked that. You know, he liked that pressure. He liked the limelight. He liked he loved to have that. And not everyone can manage that, right? And he handled it very well. It was impressive to see how being so young, you know, a young teenager, how he was able to deal with that pressure, you know, and still perform. So, you know, there's only a star in the making when you're able to deal with the pressure and still show up week in, week out and compete. Because at the end of, after every training session, we would do finishing, you know, and it's always like myself, Ronald Cerritos, Landon Donovan, and everybody else competing. It was always competing. Everybody's fighting for that starting spot. So it kept us all sharp, and it kept us all on our toes.
You talked about pressure. You also came back from an ACL tear. And back then, we weren't talking about mental health like we are now. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that support. How much pressure did you feel to come back? How much pressure did you put on yourself to rehab? What was your low point during that whole process?
Yeah. Well, it was the LCL. But still, it's you're looking at that time, it was like 8 to 12 months.
Oh my gosh.
So it's funny because I was with the national team preseason that year, and I tore my fractured my fifth metatarsal. So I was out for 2 months. My first game back was against San Jose State, which was a friendly. And Frank's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you a little bit of spot duty. I'm going to give you like last 15 minutes, go in there, you know, get your legs going. And that was supposed to be my year. This Dero's the start. He's our go-to guy. And the ball came across, hit it, scored. and I ran back. The defender kind of came in awkward and challenged, right? And I felt my leg wrap around him, but I was just in denial. And I kind of jogged, you know, kind of limberly jogged to half a line. I was like, damn.
Something's off.
Something's not right. And I started to feel that little ache in my stomach, you know, and I was just like, okay, maybe just like, you know, a little hit. So I played the rest of the game. And that night we had our shirt unveiling for our new Quakes jersey. And I called Bruce when I was getting ready. I'm like, Bruce, man, my leg is killing me. Like, I don't think I could go. And he's like, why don't you just come? Because, you know, you're the guy. Like, yeah. You're the guy that you're going to walk on stage and be like, you know, exactly. So I got there and he kind of looked at me. He's like, dude, you need to come to see me in the morning. So they replaced me on the stage. I couldn't even walk on the stage or anything. He's like, go home and go ice it. When the morning he did that, you know, knee test, and he said, man, I feel sorry for you. You're going to be out for the season. And of course, that time when he saw about mental health and stuff, it was like the lowest point at that time in my career. Never experienced anything like that. But the mentality I have is, okay.
Work to get back.
Right away. Work to get back. When do I need to get my operation? When do I need to get my surgery? And let's make this happen. And that's what I did. I took 2 months off. I went to the islands. I did some saltwater treatment. I started to walk some hills and stuff like that, and told myself, I'm gonna play this year. I'm going to come back. And I was able to come back and a month later in August, at the end of August, score a hat trick, my first hat trick in MLS.
Aye, aye, aye. Yeah. So
that had to be a nice feeling.
Oh, man, it was a beautiful feeling, man. Yeah. It was amazing. You know, just to come back playing. Even Bruce was saw me, you know, shout out to all the trainers that put in that time and energy for injured players, mm-hmm. you know, because he did that. You know, he woke up early and I was on top of him like, Bruce, I'm going to be running in a month. He's like, dude, you're like... Okay, yeah. You know, he's like, give me that. Okay, yeah, all right, yeah, all right, whatever, whatever.
Back, yeah, he's like, oh, slow down.
No, exactly. He's more like, whatever. You're crazy. There's no way you're gonna do that. And when I came back from my trip, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to start training. I'm ready to start working out. And you know, I surprised him, and we started running hills. And I'm like, I just want to run hills to try to build my muscles back up. And sure enough, he's like, dude, you're good to go. Like, you're good to start training with the team. And every player wants to hear that, right?
Yeah.
It sucks to sit down the sideline week in, week out, months, and watch your team train, and you can't even kick the ball. You can't do nothing, you know? So I get it. So all those young players that go through difficult times, that actually built my character, because after that, I felt like, you know what? I could do anything. I could come back from anything. I could do anything. And it just builds that inner strength. So don't let injuries and, you know, setbacks set you back. Look at that as an opportunity to build yourself stronger.
Occurs to me, two guys that dealt with some things like that might be sitting next to me, might have been on the same team in 2011 in DC when one of these guys won him MLS MVP award. Yeah. I promised myself I wouldn't let you leave without just sitting in the sitting back in the cut and letting you two reminisce about 2011, the MVP season, the return. Tell me about that year from your perspective.
Tough year to start, as I said. You know, that was the year with the Celtic, and I went through all that, and I left Toronto. I said enough's enough. Went to Toronto. Went to New York, and you know, looking at a stacked New York team.
How did that trade go down, by the way?
I pretty much told them I'm not going to play for the club anymore. And they could do whatever they want. I wasn't going to play another game for them just because the way I felt like I was treated, you know, and unfortunately it went down like that at the time. I think the management at the time mismanaged that situation. I think could have definitely treated that and handled that a lot more delicate, especially what I brought to the club, their first championship in terms of Canadian Cup and stuff like that. And, you know, four or five coaches every year. Every year, a new team, new players coming in.
Those early years were
DPs,
interesting.
DPs, and I'm the one, you know, regardless of who's coming in, what coach is coming in, I'm still performing. You know, my numbers still never changed. You know, DPs coming in. Oh, I don't know. It takes time, and I'm still performing regardless of who it is. So, you know, to go through all that, you know, and to leave my, I went to my hometown to win them championships and to elevate football and soccer in my hometown, priority number one, and to now have be faced with the decision that I had to say, you know what, I don't even want to play here anymore. I was just over it. So to leave that situation was disheartening, and go to New York, and at the time, you know, they're like, oh, you know, we're doing a favor because you guys are gonna probably win the MLS Cup if you go to New York because Thierry Henry, Rafa Marquez, they. I'm like, I don't want to win MLS Cup in New York. I came here to win with Toronto. Right. So for you to say that, you're not saying anything. You're not doing me any favors.
Right, we're not connecting
right now. Yeah, like, you're not connecting. Like, I'm far from happy from this situation right now. There's nothing you can say to me that's going to make me happy right now. You know. So anyway, I went to Red Bulls, and you know, immediately there was a click. And then of course at that time, you know, I was over the salary cap. Henry's DP. Rafa deep, and something had to give. So they're not going to get rid of Thierry Henry. They're not going to get Rafa Marquez. They're not going to get Timu at the time. He was over side crap. So I was the next guy to leave. And the way that happened was one of those overnight kind of things that just happened. I didn't even know about it.
Keep your bags packed.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. And I just bought a house in Jersey. Like I was in the house, no furniture, nothing. And I got the call in the morning saying, you know, you're going to you got to trade to DC. I've never done with a trade before, at least New York, Toronto. I had in my mind, like I was done. I kind of, I knew that, you know, it was
mentally,
work it.
You would grasp it.
Houston, I asked Dom, we met face to face. I said, okay, I want to go back to my hometown. I won you four championships. You know what? I love Houston. I love that. But, you know, I want to go back to my hometown. I felt like it was a time in my career where, you know, I was in my 30s at that time. I'm like, okay, let me finish off my career. That was the plan, to finish off my career in Toronto. So this is the first time that blindsided trade that I was like, at my age, this is really what's happening? Yeah. Like me, of all people? So, and again, I'm putting up numbers, right? I scored for Toronto before I left in Vancouver. I was scoring for New York. We're doing good. We're now starting to really gel as a team, and boom, you know what? You're traded. So that was the first time. So I was very unhappy about that. So I said, DC, right away. I told Francisco at the time was the team kind of administrator. I said, can you send me some tapes of DC, right? Because that's what I always do. I always look at the team and kind of see how they play, who to look out for. And, of course, I'm looking at, you know, Charlie up top and Josh Wolf. I knew Josh Wolf because me and him always battled with the U.S. national team from U-20s right up. So I always respect Josh's game. But I didn't know a lot of the guys, like Andy Nahar. I wasn't really too familiar with, like, a lot of these players. So I started to watch how they play and move. And I'm like, man, it's a young team.
Yeah.
You know, a young team. It proposed the opportunity where Ben was a new coach too. I played against Ben, battled him many times. So I was a little bit skeptical about how's this relationship going to work, right? Because we're the same age, right? I was like, he's going to look at me as like how he feels as in his age, but I'm not him, right? But as soon as I got there, he pulled me aside and he's like, listen, I want you to take this team under your wing and I want you to be one of the leaders with Josh. And immediately we clicked and I was like, okay, I think this is going to work. This is going to work. And, you know, Charlie's a great guy to off the field, on the field. So automatically we had that connection. And I said, okay, this might work. This might work.
And then he was absolutely dropping bombs from deep.
I remember that year of just being like, what the hell is going on here? And then to win MVP when you play for three teams.
Mm-hmm. Unheard of.
I'm out on my skis here. I can't imagine that's ever happened in any other sport.
And won't happen again.
That's a once in a lifetime thing.
Yeah, I think I was the first player to ever get traded three times in any sport and to still win MVP. But again, it was just my mentality that I wanted to prove everyone wrong. I was mad at the league. I was mad at TFC. So every time we played them, I scored a hat trick. He knows me. When it, like, during training, I take it serious. But game day, don't mess with me. Game day, I'm focused. I'm zoned in. I don't do no media. I'm just very, like, talk to me after. My business is getting ready for this field. So when I stepped up the field, I think these guys felt like, oh, this guy's serious. And yeah, because I went there, I only like winning. I don't like losing, right? We got a lot of battles in training and
a lot
because, you know, that's how was it with the Quakes. That's how we used to. We used to fight a lot, yeah. You know, amongst each other. And Dom had to tell us, go in the locker room. Eddie, Rico, D-Roll, go in the locker room because we're fighting because 5v2s would break on fights, you know, because we were that competitive. You know, and without that, with that mentality, it's a winning mentality, right? It wasn't a sore loser mentality. It's a winning mentality.
All right. A legend. Absolutely. Still is. Will always be.
You got a lot out of me.
A lot.
This is what we like to do. We like to just sit down and see what we can get. Stories, everything
this
else.
This was the definition of, like, chop it up.
Yep.
Just hang out. Be free. Talk about good experiences.
Yeah.
Remember the good days.
That's the story of D-Row and MLS, probably.
Yeah, yeah, that's the ebbs and flows of this sport. You know, it's not always going to be smooth. You know, professional sports, there's going to be challenges. You just got to take those challenges, roll with the punches, and still perform, right? And I think that's the key. A lot of people right now, a lot of young players, it's hard for them to adapt to a lot of the challenges. And you find that the players that are able to adapt with those difficult moments, yeah, maybe, you know, you come in here, you're not starting, and you come in here as a first draft, or you come in here as a big name player. Well, you still have to prove yourself
week in, week out.
You know, you have to perform. And like I said, with the social media too, you might be, you know, 200, 100 something thousand, 400,000, a million followers. That doesn't matter if you can't perform week in, week out, right? And I think those dynamics are a little bit different in the modern day game, which we're fortunate not to have to deal with. But, you know, it, like I said, it's good to see how it's evolved, MLS and the league, how it's evolved, and to know that I've played a part of that, to know that, you know, Charlie's played a part of that, and we're still giving back to the game, you know, in different forms, in different aspects, is another reason why you're seeing this league and soccer in America have success.
All right, we'll cheer on Canada in 2022.
Let's go, Canada.
US
let's
will be go, front, let's go. Front of heart, but Canada's right back there in the
as you say, big up the man them.
I was telling him I wish I brought my D-Row TFC jersey.
would have had him get one of these out here, just for old time's sake.
Right here,
old time's sake. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate you always, brother. Appreciate you guys.